today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
You know, we're not like a band that, you know, we'll just play a few riffs and just jam around that riff and come up with stuff. Usually what he brings in is like a fully formed sort of thing in his mind.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Rockin' the Suburbs podcast. On behalf of my co-host, Jim Lanahan, my name is Patrick Foster. Today, we're going to continue our conversation with Dot Dash, a favorite band of ours from the Washington, D.C. area, and we're going through every track on their new album, Madman in the Rain. And today, we're going to discuss four more songs from that record, so get ready to dig into that. But before we do, I want to remind everyone out there that now is the time to send in your picks for the best of 2022. We're going to start rounding those up and get those on the air for you in January. So please pick out an album and a song. And if you want to put a few honorable mentions in there as well, you feel free to do so. But we're only going to focus on the one album and the one song from everybody. And we need to hear your voice for this one. That's a requirement for these, just like our new music picks. We want to hear your voice. So you can record a voice file on your smartphone and send it to rock@suburbspod.com over the email. Or you can call our suburban party line, 612-440-1984, and you can leave a message there. But either way, we'd love to have your picks, and our picks are always so excellent and really enlightening and interesting to hear what everybody decides to pick out as the very best of the year. And 2022 is a pretty darn good year in music, and Dot Dash's album is going to be on my year-end list, that's for sure. All right, so right now we're going to jump into the third song on the record. We're going to drop the needle on the song Tense and Nervous.
Car ride with the world of dervish. All the way there, I was tense and nervous. She had a sense of senseless purpose. Said she was deep and on the surface. You can't go on, you can't go back. You gotta have a heart to have a heart attack. Car ride on a whirling tornado. Ended up in Juarez, all the way from Laredo. How did I get here? How can I get back? You can't go on, you can't go back. You gotta have a heart to have a heart attack.
All right, is that the patented Banks sense of humor?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
When he came up with that line, the thing that naturally occurred to me is after he said, you got to have a heart attack. So I said, let's do a stop there. And I did like the heartbeat thing, yeah, on the kick drum to try to do it. And I remember when we first started playing the show, this song was around the time that we were getting ready to talk about we were doing some shows with the Undertones, and the song was sort of new at that point in time. And I remember I was like at the merch table selling some CDs, and this Irish guy who was a friend of the Undertones came up and bought the CD, and then later asked for his money back because that song wasn't on the CD. We hadn't recorded it yet. He had heard it live and enjoyed it.
Well, what he did was he came up to me, and first he kept telling me that we sounded like Rudy, although the way he pronounced it, he kept saying like Ludi. So I didn't get what he was saying. And then he was like, is that song, You Gotta Have a Heart Attack, on the CD? And I was like, no, I'm afraid it's not. And then he started explaining to me like why I now had to buy him a beer. I managed to get out of doing
that. Oh, is that what it was? Yeah.
You have to buy me a beer because it's not on the record.
Yeah. That was really fun. That was, yeah. We played with the Undertones at the Gramercy Theater. And what's amazing is how many people that go to these Undertone shows are from Ireland and also from Derry and had some sort of personal connection to the Undertones. It was really cool.
But that was in Boston, I think, when that guy... that guy.
Yeah, that was the show
in Boston.
I thought
it was in New York.
And
he may have been a guy that attended both shows, as a surprisingly large number of people did. It's cool.
Hmm.
Kevin, my cousin Kevin was at the show, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah, that was really funny.
Well, let me just ask you real quickly on this song, Terry, because we talked about this line, you got to have a heart to have a heart attack. Is that a line that just came to you while you were writing this particular song? Is it a line that came to you somehow, you know, independently and you put it into a song?
Yeah, or? Yeah, I never really have lyrics that I'm like, you know, that might be a good idea to do that. I know some people do that. No, it's just what comes across when I'm playing guitar. Yeah, I mean, I just kind of almost, it's like speaking in tongues or something. It's just sort of like, blah, 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 you know, like I just go with whatever I come up with, you know, first word, best word or whatever. And, you know, sometimes it's just like a phonetic thing. It's not even a discernible word, or it might be a discernible word or phrase, you know, and it's not like necessarily you get the first line first. You might get the third line first,
right,
you know. But yeah, I mean, I feel like I should have a more thoughtful answer. But the truth is, it's just kind of babble. You know, I'm trying to make it sort of, I suspect there are people who just have kind of prosaic, boring stuff and they try to make it weird. My stuff is just kind of babble and then I try to make it make sense or scan in some way.
If you spend a lot of time with Terry, you realize he's speaking the truth. He tends to babble a lot.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, Terry, because I remember reading or watching an interview with Paul Simon, and I can't remember which it was, but he talked about a very similar kind of process. He said he would get the first basic music down before he had any words sometimes, and he would actually have a pair of speakers in a room in his house where he would play that back and would start to do that. He would just start to see what came to his mind and fit melodically and also where he was trying to go. And then he would begin to piece the lyrics together based on that. I think this was around like the Rhythm of the Saints, Graceland time when that interview took place. But I thought it was really fascinating that he kind of did it in that way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not exactly in his league. So, you know, about 5,000 rungs below on the ladder. Yeah. I just do it on guitar. Like I don't record anything or even write anything. It's just sort of what I come up with. And if I'm not coming up with anything, well, then I just leave it alone. You know, I don't, it either kind of comes pretty easily or it doesn't at all. So, you know.
Yeah. When he comes in to rehearsal, he never brings in just music. You know, everything is sort of fully formed. So he doesn't come in with, you know, we're not like a band that, you know, we'll just play a few riffs and just jam around that riff and come up with stuff. Usually what he brings in is like a fully formed sort of thing in his mind.
Got it. And then one last thing I want to say in this song is there are mentions here of other albums. So Candy O and Get the Knack. Personal favorites of yours?
They're really not, but it occurs to me that like that they're both from the same time when I was about 14 or something. But yeah, again, like those, I think it just phonetically, they just, oh, wow. And it, you know, it sounds really kind of, you know, clever or, you know, maybe not clever, but, you know, like a kind of planned pat thing. And I was psyched. I was like, oh, that's cool. I'll definitely use that. But yeah, I don't really, it fit, you know, and it's kind of cool. And it's not like two, they're sort of similar things, you know? So
I think it puts the listener in a certain headspace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the Laredo and Juarez, I've never been to either place, but yeah, I mean, if it just fits, if it fits and it's, and I kind of blabbed it out, then, you know, you have to kind of let yourself, not to be too new agey or whatever, but even for an obscure underground band like ours, you know, I'm not exactly on the hit parade, but like to do anything in writing or whatever, I think you just have to kind of let yourself go for it, you know, and not feel like, you know, and now I'm going to have a lyric, you know, you just sort of have to like sing along with whatever you're playing and see what you get. And it might just be sort of, again, like phonetics, like, you know, but sometimes those things turn into words or, you know.
All right. Moving on. Track number 4 is Animal Stone.
You got the mind of a criminal and the conscience of a saint. you know I can't predict the weather. I think it looks like rain. One after nine, oh nine, space time.
This one's really...
I'm glad you let it play to that point, because I love that transition from the little keyboard solo to Terry's guitar solo. I think that's...
Well, cool. I'll let you guys great. Talk. I was just going to say, this is just... I found this to be a really interesting song on this record. I want to hear your guys' thoughts on it.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I love, and I think we all do, I love to play this one live. It always works really good, really well. I feel it's I don't want to be self-congratulatory, but I think it's a really, really good one. One time, this is totally name droppy, but I don't care. We opened for the Minus Five, and it was a night that both Peter Buck and Mike Mills were in the band. And after we played, they hadn't played yet. And I think it was, and I was walking down the hallway and Peter Buck was sort of in this other doorway and he said, "Hey, I like your band." And I said, "Oh, wow. Thanks a lot." And he had this, jacket on that was like, and I was like, "Is that the South Central Rain jacket?" And he said, "Oh, no. It's kind of like that one. I lost that a long time ago." But then he said, "Hey, that song, you know, the E minor, the dark." He's like, is that you guys? That's that original?" I was like, "Oh yeah." He's like, "That was good." And I was like, yeah, you know, so not that it has anything to do with them, but that was
must cool. have felt so, great. Yeah,
it did. I mean, it's a totally name droppy dorky song, a dorky story to tell. But I was psyched.
I'll name drop too, just from because you reminded me of it. That show, Kurt Block from the Fastbacks, whom I absolutely adore, was playing guitar for them as well, and he was really complimentary about the band as well. You know, here's the thing that like. I say that like Terry comes in with these fully formed songs, but when that song first came in, it was decidedly different from how it sounds now. And Hunter actually came up with a lot of like the syncopated bass and drum parts during the transitions. You know, he's like, "Hey, Danny, you know, try and do some, I'm going to do this on the bass. See if you can sort of like follow along with what I'm doing on the bass." And so when the song first started off, it sounded to me like it, because even though we take the name of the band from the Wire song, not a lot of our songs really evoke Wire musically. But when we first started playing it in some of the early rehearsal recordings of it, that's what it sounded like to me. That's what I felt like I was channeling, at least, you know, some of the more sinister type songs that are on Pink Flag, like Reuters or something like that. But over time, the song really evolved. And that's what happens, like, especially on this album, where we wrote these songs when we were ready to record them a couple of years ago. Well, we kept on rehearsing them, and then they just sort of, like, gradually evolved. And then Sanoff comes in and puts in keyboard parts, and it winds up sounding surprisingly pleasantly different from how it did when you first started off. But a lot of credit goes to Hunter for this one, for a lot of those.
Yeah, I love that part. And, you know, it's interesting you say that too, Danny, because to me, the keyboards on overdub on this one is the most Steve Naive or Elvis Costello in the early attractions, right? That, or one of the ones you get that vibe on this record. So it's interesting that it started out in a kind of a darker place.
Hunter, anything?
The part where it goes out of the, this is one of those songs, like, I like this song. I think it sounds good live. When we heard the recorded version of this, I was like, oh my God, like the really cool wormy keyboard thing that Jeff does that we were just talking about. And then that going into Terry's guitar riff where Terry goes to the ding, 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 ding. And then he goes, bang. Like, I love that. I think it sounds good.
All right, cool. And every bassist loves to play a good walking bass line, right?
Oh, yeah. Every bassist just loves to be heard, Jim.
Just acknowledged.
That's right. Okay, here's the title track, Madman in the Rain.
The weather's getting wild. The streets are a mess. The light's gone out of the sky.
Harry, what was the inspiration for this song?
That one feels to me kind of glammy, you know? Again, these things are all subjective and someone could hear it totally differently, but it sort of felt kind of glammy. The Madman in the Rain, it isn't anyone particular, but I see it as kind of like a tragic figure or a benign figure and maybe even a tragic figure, not a bad figure, just like someone who you're sort of like, oh, that's so-and-so, you know what I mean? So it's not really referring to anyone in particular, but to the extent it is, it's kind of, you know, a lost, I don't know, just a sort of a damaged person or whatever. And I liked that it was kind of mid-tempo. A lot of our stuff is really fast and kind of frantic. And so I liked that it had a little more, not gravitas, but I don't know, just atmosphere, so.
Yeah, and I will say, too, Danny's drumming is fantastic on this. I love the way it comes in with the cymbals and then the sort of little, military-style rolls that happen at parts. It's a wonderful shift in tone, and it's great. And was it because you liked the track so much that you chose to name the album after it?
It just seemed like an album title. Like, you know, our first couple of records, one, two, three, they were just phrases, just snatches. They could have been lyrics. They weren't lyrics. They weren't anything. They were just titles. Then the fourth one was a lyric, but not a song. Earthquakes and Tidal Waves is a lyric, but not a song title. Then Searchlights was a song title. Proto Retro is just made up. And this Madman in the Rain is a song title. It just felt like a 70s rock song title, you know, album title or something. It just sort of seemed like we've been doing this long enough. We can kind of be a little bit indulgent, you know. If that was like your first album title, it'd be like,
yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? It would be like, who do these guys think they are?
But Jethro we're
like,
Tull.
This is our seventh album. It can be called Madman in the Rain.
I think oftentimes Terry comes up with the names of the records. I think Earthquakes and Tidal Waves, you know, I don't remember that I suggested that or not, but it was just like a line in the song. But this one, I think Terry and I, and probably Hunter as well, like just the name is really evocative. And Terry actually took that picture. I mean, that's actually not a Photoshop picture. I mean, he adjusted the contrast in it to make the figure look darkened, but he actually took that picture of a person in the rain in front of the portrait gallery in D.C.
It's not even like the figure is that color. It's just an iPhone picture, believe it or not. But it looks like a painting.
Yeah, it
or
does.
Something, so
absolutely.
Yeah.
And to me, the song is, and you hit the word that I was going to use, Terry. It's really atmospheric, and I love the atmosphere, and it's just sort of like this evocative thing. And Hunter's bass line in it is like this lilting sort of melody, and. When we went down to a three-piece, I think more than anyone, Hunter really benefited from that because Hunter, like, stepped up his game to to really create counter melodies and so forth for a lot of the songs, and you hear that a lot in this one in particular.
He benefited from that change.
That's right. That is right.
Well, Danny, I want to ask, like, when you guys play this live, how do you view that? Do you view that as a chance to, you know, sort of play this part, or you know, like in the trio I play in, sometimes our drummer's asking for a slower song so he can catch his breath and like actually get back up to speed.
And Danny, the listeners should understand too that Danny came up, you know, through the hardcore.
That's exactly right.
So where you probably never got a break, right?
Yeah, well, you know, as I've gotten older, the bands have increased in subtlety and the ability for me to stretch out and do other things. I mean, played in mod bands, skinhead bands, hardcore bands, punk bands, new wave bands, goth bands, shoegaze bands, you know, all through the whole spectrum. And it's funny you say this, when they first approached me more than 10 years ago about playing with them, I was like, oh my God, how am I going to, like, you know, figure out the chops to play in a power pop band? Because it was something I'd never really done yet before. But for some, yeah, I'm old. So let's not to put it too fine a point on it. I'm a little bit older than the rest of the guys in the band. So yes, I do appreciate the slower song here and there. But that's not why I appreciate this song. I like songs that have sort of a groove in them as well. And this song has like a nice little groove to it. So it allows me to be a little bit more creative than just like playing sort of a 4/4 beat and stuff like that.
Outstanding work.
It's
all right. And then this next song would close out side one. This would be Airwaves.
You were falling through the airwaves, coming to view on the staircase. I'm certain it was you. I saw your face out of space and time. There's a sound in November, rolling like a cloud, glowing like an ember. Something you forgot and won't remember until next time. So goodbye and good luck. I hope things turn out alright. Where you going in the morning, in the light? So goodbye and good luck. I hope things turn out alright. Where you going in the gloaming, in the night?
Okay, so real quick, the three notes I took down on this song. The first note is that the first time I listened to this album, this was the one that immediately jumped out at me.
Ah.
All right. Second is great drum fills. And the third note is New Order bass line. So which part would you like to take first?
Hunter, talk about New Order.
Well, what I'll say about this one, sort of overall, and it just struck me again listening to it. You know, it's a really sort of straightforward, easy, we often lead off the set with this because it's sort of a easy one to play and you ease into it. But one of the things I really love about this is the way that the vocals sound like, it sounds like Terry is like multiple people and he's like answering himself as he's going through it. And then it'll like link up on the third line. So I think that's really cool. You know, the New Order thing, as I mentioned, again, you might think that I'm like some sort of huge New Order fan, but you know, I like New Order fine. I don't think I own any New Order records, but I don't know. One time we were just playing this and, you know, I played the bass part sort of high the first time on that instrumental break. And then I was like, I should try and do something different on the second one. And I think I played the New Order thing as a joke and Danny started doing the New Order drums.
Yeah.
And then Terry started doing the New Order guitar. We thought it was funny. We just kind of stuck with it.
Yeah. I mean, Hunter came up with it and we joined in. And yeah, I mean, it's just like some of the other stuff. It's not I wouldn't say it's not really like a nod or anything. It's just outright theft, but in a good way. You know what I mean? It's just like it fits in the meter. Put it in there. You know what I mean? It's like I feel like we're building a thing and it's like, oh, this will fit there. Well, you know, and I just think that's a good way to approach it. But this song you were asking, I always feel like I don't have an answer for lyrics. This song kind of does have a lyrical sort of thing. It's kind of reincarnation and dream stuff and things like that. So there's a little bit of, it's about as literal, it's not really literal, but it's about as literal as I get. You know, it's sort of about kind of reincarnation. That sounds stupid, but that's kind of...
I sort of think of this song as also sort of like a prototypical dot dash song to some extent, for in the sense that it, on every one of our albums, you'll find like a song like this. It's sort of like a mid to up tempo song with like sort of just like catchy little bits to it, where we're in, they may say we're not paying homage, that it is outright theft. But, you know, in this album in particular, there are lots of little nods to bands, throughout the record.
Terry, since Hunter was mentioning it, what kind of is your vocal overdub process? I mean, is it one of those things where you need everybody out of the room, you know, like send everybody away and I'm gonna do it? Or how do you approach that?
I don't, I only want the bass and the drums in the headphones. I don't have any extra guitar. I mean, I have my guitar. Well, hang on, that's not true. I have rhythm guitar, bass and drums. So it's like a gig, right? Like I don't have the little sparkly little lead things I might have put in there, because they kind of throw you off and you start like singing along with them or whatever, you know what I mean? So it's just, I just record with the rhythm guitar, bass and drums as if it were a gig. You know, the best advice I ever got in like the first band I played in like 35 years ago or whatever, I was in a band with two guys who were in like a real band, like a local band, and you know, we sort of formed our little thing. And you know, one time we were practicing, it was like our first practice, and I had all these songs and stuff, and I'd never really done it. And I was kind of like fully into it musically, but kind of, you know, like singing quietly into the mic. And the guy stopped and he's like, "Your songs are really good. So just you do it, but you got to get right up on the mic and sing loud, or it's not going to work." So sing loud was the best musical advice I ever got, because I think it's like a metaphor for other things, just like you got to commit, you know. So I just sing as loud as I can, not screaming, but sort of full on, and I just do it a few times. And yeah, I don't know if I'm answering it, but yeah, I just try to do it like it's a gig.
Yeah, totally makes sense. Yeah,
he doesn't throw us out. But, and Hunter, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we've ever been there for any of the vocal sessions that he's done. So we don't actually know if Terry's really singing on the albums or not, because we've never actually seen it happen.
Well, I mean, you know, in all, there's some of Danny's patented humor. But we, you know, we record, we do kind of do it in like a sort of, we have a sort of a process, like load in the night before, so you're not loading in that day. And we record, you know, just as a band. And then those guys are done. And so then I do vocals, and they're gone, but not really by design. But that is true. I guess they haven't been around. But I always feel like the vocals are an afterthought. I feel like we've spent all the time recording and I'm like, now I have to sing. Like, hurry up, just get up there and sing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, and it is tremendously thrilling to sit there watching someone sing the song. You know, you don't know where to look while they're doing it, and you don't want to throw them off.
Right. I mean, I wouldn't care if they did. I wouldn't care if they did, but that is true. They probably haven't been around.
All right, and that was Terry Banks, guitarist and singer and songwriter for Dot Dash, discussing the song Airwaves. I want to thank Terry, Danny, and Hunter very much for joining us this week and analyzing their excellent new album, Madman in the Rain. Tomorrow, we're going to have the third part of this installment, where we're going to hear about three more songs from the record. As you heard, we ended side one here today, and we're going to pick it up on the second side tomorrow. So make sure you stay tuned. And thanks to Dot Dash again. And on behalf of Jim Linehan, I am Patrick Foster, and we will talk to you guys tomorrow. He
benefited from that change.